that when you're wandering from one to the other, when you look at the sign, it's Jekyll.
Thank you, Jay Hupty has weighed heavily all week on the show because, of course, he facilitated the Julie Crone visit. Were you here for Colonial Affair? Jimmy was. I still have not got an official word if I was.
We were, you know what? I'll tell you where I was. No. We were at Monmouth Park, and we were getting ready. It was a late draw, and four or five of us put together an exacta box, a four-horse exacta box. I think it was $5 or $10 box. It was a big deal. Coming down the set, boom, we hit. It was bonanzas, right?
All over the place. Oh, my God, yeah. It was just,
Was back in the day where you could bet. Well, all I know is we bet at Monmouth and it paid $1,000. And if you'd have bet it through Belmont, it would have paid like $10,000. And we, of course, the guy bet it.
Because it was separate pools.
It was like we thought we hit a bonanza. We thought we were going out and we were drinking lemonade instead. But we still, it was all right. But that was a ceremonious day for, you know, with Schulhofer and Julie. Yeah. And it was great. And it was great for the Monmouth crowd because she was Monmouth Park. And it was great. The place was going nuts.
You couldn't bet her and you couldn't bet against her. Two more hours. Twin Spires weekend preview. We're going to check in, speaking of Twin Spires, because we got Ellis Park to talk about. It's opening weekend at Ellis. And boy, two nice cards, a lot of maiden races. Extra Anejo runs tomorrow in an allowance. Lots to talk about. Schaap and Scully, Nicole Russo, Nick Tamaro's going to be here, much, much more. Back after this, the Belmont Park.
The races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Beck. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We'll be right back. we're back. And things have gotten quiet today. It took all week here, you know, because of the crazy smoke situation. There was really very few people out. And then, of course, there was no training Thursday, which also contributed to a quiet scene here. But it finally came to life this morning, and in no small part thanks to Hammer and to Jimmy, and a quick Aaron Wellman visit, and who else stopped by. He couldn't stay because he had to go back to the city, but Jim Gluckson from Breeders' Cup was here, and there are Win and You're In races this weekend, like the Phipps and the Met, etc. So there's some of that going on. We'll talk to Jimmy before we take the first half of the season break and catch up on, because you know, it's getting to be winning your in season, so there's all that. There's already been some international ones, and we had the one at Santa Anita too. Peter Ertin getting in with the Shoemaker win, so with Exalted getting into the Breeders' Cup Mile. So lots of that. Let's get Scott Shapiro in here because you know we're focused on Belmont, but as I always say during Triple Crown season weekend previews. We don't live by, you know, Triple Crown race venues alone, especially under the circumstances that finds Ellis opening 3 weeks early. And as Ron Moquette tweeted yesterday, it's the best Sunday in the history of Ellis Park. Scott Shapiro joins us. Shap, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Glad to hear the air quality situation is what we had hoped and that things are reconvening. At Belmont,
big time. It's gorgeous. It's going to be three fabulous days. 70s, you know, low 70s, breezy, perfect.
Great news. We definitely need it, and was obviously everybody there wants it to happen, and everybody afar as well. So it's great news to be able to conduct the two monster days there. And you mentioned it, getting started at Ellis. Tomorrow and Sunday, and then 4 day racing weeks from there on out to 10 race cards drawn over the last few days, and full fields, great wagering. Looking forward to it.
Do we want to start with some Ellis and then swing back to Belmont?
Yeah, that sounds good. Unfortunately, without the thoroughbreds out and the card being drawn yesterday, Sunday-wise, I haven't done much handicapping yet with all the Belmont work. But just to touch on the quality of the card, to Ron Moquette's point, I mean, you've got the Matt Wynn as race 9, now stretched out to the mile and an eighth configuration in Henderson. And before it, you've got the Leslie's Lady, $175,000 for three-year-old fillies. And this race came up real fun with Topsy coming back from the runner-up effort in Ms. Preakness, Friendly Persuasion coming back. You've got Positano Sunset. So that looks like it's going to be a very fun betting race. But, yeah, I've got some opinions on Saturday, and then we can go over a couple of the stakes races at Belmont, of course.
I do want to mention, for those that didn't see the draw for the Matt Wynn, a quick rundown. Dennington shows up here out of the Sir Barton. Disarm, fourth in the Kentucky Derby, if you forgot. Bo Cruz for Al Stahl, who is a romping allowance winner, and also a runoff winner, breaking the maiden at Fairgrounds. Verifying in here out of the Derby. Go Soldier Go for Pletcher, and Victorious Racing, a Tapitcher colt out of the Peter Pan. Ray's Kane, eighth in the Derby, and King Russell, 15th in the Derby, arguably the most deep, at least in terms of exiting things like the Kentucky Derby, etc., Peter Pan, to put a field like this together, and then an emergent allowance horse in Bo Cruz. So a really fun Matt Wynn. 440.
No
doubt. And don't forget, by the way, Ellis is Central Time. So FYI, 4:40 Central for the Matt Wynn. There's also a nice maiden race on Sunday. And then you know, this Saturday card, I mentioned as we were going out, I don't know if you were listening, but the third race at Ellis tomorrow, 2:48 Eastern, features Extra Anejo coming back out of that federal judge upset win and you know, ended up being second, kind of got kind of had left a little too much to do. And extra Anejo, 3-5 in here, going the odd configuration, the same configuration we have at Saratoga. Ellis was referenced when the Wilson shoot was reintroduced up at Saratoga. It's that same sort of dog leg, stiff dog leg turn, going the 1 mile at Ellis. So here's extra Anejo coming back. $120,000 maiden race fifth for three-year-olds. There's a good two-turn allowance that features quite a few nice horses, including Prove Worthy, who was considered for the Belmont, etc. The Prince's Spur for Phil Bauer, Caternion for Brian Lynch. There's a lot going on in this group as well, and that's just on the front page. I didn't even turn around to Wanaku for Tom Amos. 10-gauge for Asmussen and Three Chimneys and Harrell Ventures. So two great cards to get the early start at Ellis kicked off tomorrow.
Yes, sir. And, great point on the one-mile configuration. It's not the one-turn variety, but it's certainly not the two-turn. So horses cutting back, certainly something to keep in mind at Ellis. With the 1 mile, if they're coming from places where it is two turns, it will be a cutback. So, want something to think about. And yeah, I don't. I mean, extra Anejo. I mean, he ran huge off the bench. Federal Judge just got out of the gates well, and he broke slowly from the inside in that Derby Day opener. But he got back the same number in terms of Brisnet, 95 speed rating. Now moves outside, gets a little added ground. I hate to use the term free square in horse racing, but it looks pretty close to that to me.
All right.
Non-free squares, though, a couple. Race five is a maiden, special weight, fillies and mares, three-year-olds and up, and again, a one-mile race there. And nice field. I mean, Vanished ran huge in defeat first out, got hammered for Pletcher, two turns on the turf at Churchill, and Cecile was just really, really good for Lindsey Schultz from last to first, or else Vanish wouldn't be a maiden. But I prefer Copa Girl here, my best bet of the day. Daughter of Constitution was supposed to debut at Keeneland, drew the rail, ended up scratching the morning of, came back on the Oaks finale, the 13th race on Oaks Day, and didn't break very well from the inside, picked things up on the turn after being mid-pack, and just left herself too much to do and ran into a real good horse, a real good filly for Al Stahl in Huntress for Hire, who won by almost 7 lengths. The runner-up American Retro came back to win at Churchill last week. So for me, Copa Girl will be a key in the early part of the day at 5-2.
The seven in the fifth race, going the 1 mile, fillies and mares.
Yeah, and then the next race is just a beaten 10, but I'm gonna make a play in this race. I think the pace should be hot. Another one of these 1 mile races over the main track, and if you're wondering, if there's no turf racing the first couple of days, the course was just getting ready. Obviously, the amount of time they thought they had to get it ready didn't turn out to be accurate. But we should, from everything I hear, we should have turf racing at Ellis starting next week. So all's good on that front for those that might be wondering. But the sixth race here, I'm going to go to a price at number four, Hey Boss. Two races against the flow for Fausto Gutierrez in Florida, against slightly better. A lot of speed in here. I think going to get a much better setup. And both of his wins, while he hasn't raced over the dirt since last year, both have come over the dirt here in Kentucky. So 8-1, I'll go with number four, Hey Boss, in the sixth, which is a beaten 10 claimer.
Fausto Gutierrez and Jesus Castanon. Hey Boss, the four horse in the sixth race.
Yes, sir. And those are my two main plays on the card. Some good races, though, you mentioned towards the back. Didn't have a super strong opinion in the allowance race, race nine, where Empire Strikes Fast returns to the races after the disappointing effort against Winners in the Lexington. I thought the Prince's Spur with the hot Bauer barn was the likeliest winner in here, but I thought it was probably a formful race with the horses you mentioned, the Prince's Spur, Tiwanaku, and Empire Strikes Fast.
I would, that proved worthy. I probably needs a long look, I would imagine.
Yeah, that one, those mile and a quarter races, maiden races at Churchill, don't tend to turn out to be key races all that often, but $325,000 purchase came rolling late to get the job done at the 10 furlong distance on Derby week for Pletcher.
You know, we should take 1 second, I think, just because we didn't expect this clearly as recently as 10 days ago. So the getting Ellis back on the menu, to be honest, I don't think people are going to be expecting it. And so FYI, be aware. And in terms of the betting menu, a quick survey, standard early and late pick fours. There is a, and fives, there's also a middle pick four, which goes races 4 through 7. So looks like 3 pick fours on a daily basis, as far as we know, Scott.
When there's 10 races, just like there Churchill, when there's okay. 10 races, we'll have that middle pick four that you referenced. If it's 9, and the plan is to have 10, but, you know, there'll be days perhaps where we end up with 9 as well. So when there's 10, we're always going to have that third pick four. If there's only 9, we'll have just the 2 pick fours where it starts out in race 2 and then in race 6.
Very good. And I saw where Travis will grace the booth and for the 3 weeks, right? And there's actually an interesting and bittersweet reference here, of course, because and I imagine that Travis I would think had to have met Luke Krybosch, at some point as Travis was getting started. But I'm sure that he'll appreciate calling races where Luke did again as well.
Yeah, no, Travis went out for lunch with him yesterday. He's looking forward to the opportunity to call at a new racetrack. And it'll be Joe, Caitlin, and myself swapping. Well, the two of the three of us will be at every these next few weeks, and then when we get into the the second part of the Ellis meet, it'll be just me and Joe here in Kentucky. So, but the same crew as you've had at Churchill over the last several weeks will be embracing you at Ellis starting tomorrow.
Outstanding. All right. Well, then we're going to be looking forward to some Henderson and some Evansville pushes from you guys as you get familiar.
Yes, sir. Couple Belmont opinions before I go?
Absolutely.
Okay. I think we're on the same horse in the Ogden Phipps, especially when you take price into account. You know, no disrespect to Secret Oath and Clarier, but I don't think there's a lot of speed in here. We'll see how much that impacts things. And then the one turn variety of the mile and a 16th, I think Search Results second off the bench makes a lot of sense. Obviously love this oval, will be a better price than those two. And I think Played Hard is worth including as well for the reasons you said. Another horse wouldn't be, I don't know exactly who to expect to be on the lead, but maybe Played Hard, even though it's a cutback. Who do you have on the lead here?
You know what? That's a good question. That's a good question.
Yeah. I can see it being Search Results, Played Hard, or Pass the Champagne. You know, I think it'll be a rider's decision type deal. But all of them will be much better prices than Secret Oath and Clarier. I don't think they're without a chance.
That was my thinking as well.
Okay. The Woody Stevens Fun Race. I think the case is going to be pretty honest. And I thought Fort Bragg was pretty interesting. The blinkers going on, Joel back aboard. I thought they, lost to General Jim in the Pathé Mile, but I would argue was a bit better. You know, those two ran to the wire together. And I heard Hammer mention Victory Formation, a horse that I think at a price on the cutback and that outside draw makes some sense. I mean, this is a horse that I know they were very high on going into the Risen Star and thought two turns would be no issue. The Risen Star was crazy, didn't make the lead. They went real fast up front. And then the race at Oakland off the freshening, they also went crazy up front. So now this horse is going to actually get to relax outside. I think he's worth including. And maybe the setup will be good enough for Gilmore to have a say on the slight cutback, but a really fun race where I think the Baffords will take a lot of the money, and as will General Jim, but I think it's more wide open than that.
Just like this, I mean, you go up and down your first pass, and you say, he can win, can't win, exotic candidate, etc. And, you know, you just try to, I just try to trim it as best you can, you know. With those back-to-back races, this and the Jiper, it just is too taxing. If you know what you can do, I suppose, and this is an individual decision. You use your multis, and if there's a horse that you're scared of, throw a wind saver on him. And if you get upset, at least you've played. I mean, if you're worried about a horse that's going to destroy your rolling wagers, then, you know, a couple of wind savers on double digit horses that are, you know, at C's and C minuses in your pecking order. That's a reasonable way to cover yourself under the circumstance of those kinds of fields.
I found Arabian Lion to be, you know, a tough one to figure out. I mean, you know, thoroughgraph-wise, obviously has run maybe not obvious to those who don't get thoroughgraph, but has run the fastest races, probably every metric. But these last two races are at a mile and a 16th. That's obviously not the same here. And he had favorable trips on the front end in both of them. So is he going to be able to sit, you know, maybe in a pocket type spot, because I don't think he's fast enough to deal with the New York Thunders and the Harrodsburgs and, you know, the real speed sprinter speeds in here. I mean, maybe he's just gotten good and figured things out, but, you know, he's going to have to do it a different way than he has in these last two fast races.
All right.
And let's see, we got one more here. The Japer, I'm not overly creative. The Met Mile, Cody's Wish just too much for me. I know the rail. I'm hopeful that the rail will keep people from being overly confident. I just think he's a machine at this point. I don't have any desire to play against it. And then in the Belmont.
Hold on. We got one. Okay. We got one. Another piece of scratch information ahead of tomorrow. Fort Bragg has got to come out. He's got a temperature and an elevated white blood cell count. That spells shipping fever, but he's going to stay around. He's going to stay in New York. He'll stay at the Terra Nova barn, as the Baffert horses always do, and he'll look to the Dwyer. So that's too bad. Fort Bragg comes out.
Big scratch.
Yep. Thanks to Jay Hovde for and Dave Grenning for that tidbit. All right. So field of 12 now in the Woody Stevens. And can I tell you something? I was going to use him only because there were just too many smart opinions that were fearing him, and he wasn't really for me. So I am not unhappy that he's coming out of this, to be honest.
Yeah, I know that feeling, the kind of horse you're like, too many people I know that I respect like this horse. I want to beat him, but I'm spreading. I don't want him to ruin my day either. But, yeah, when those types come out, it's never a bad thing for a horse player. And then in the Belmont, I respect Todd in this race. I respect Tappets. I respect, you know, Tappet Trice and Forte to an extent. I thought Tappet Trice, you know, this has been everybody's Belmont horse for months. I mean, I was underwhelmed completely by his Kentucky Derby. I know they're not going to go as fast, and that's not his style. But he had a similar trip to Angel of Empire and Mage, and just really did not put in much of a run. So I'm going to let Forte beat me. I'll probably use Capitrice defensively. Angel of Empire is my top pick. Hopefully can be sitting more mid-pack with the blinkers going on, stretching out. And I'm going to use Archangelo and Hit Show with Angel of Empire.
I'm not too far out of that. That you and I are akin on this play. Good. All right.
Yeah. I'll just tip my cap to Forte if he wins, you know, kind of thing. I can't do it at the price, and same with Tapa Trice. Neither would surprise, but as the likely two favorites, I'll go other ways.
I'm in the same frame of mind.
All right. Well, sounds good. I'm once again super happy. Everything's going to work out there. A couple nice days, and hopefully we get off to a good start in Henderson starting tomorrow.
Well, best of luck to everybody there, and I know it's going to be a little bit of a challenge and kind of a slightly unscheduled upheaval, but it'll smooth out quickly. The racing, I mean, based on these, you know, first two cards, the racing should be terrific at the P-Patch.
Yes, sir.
I love it. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Steve. Have fun, man.
I appreciate it. Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Schapp, 34, on your Twitter dial. Well, we've had lots of support from the public pitching in here and giving us the rip from today's headline kinds of news. I can't keep track of everything that that happens, but that is. And I'm just checking here. I'm just checking to see if we've got the scratches yet, and it does not look like it. No, not yet. All right. Well, just it's getting to be, yeah, it's 10:30, so it should be in the next little while. We're going to get to Scully next, and we'll get James's thoughts about the weekend. Hammer hadn't really had a chance to look at the races at Santa Anita, but there's also Monmouth. I had the Monmouth, the Lady's Secret at Monmouth tomorrow, and the only other, it's an Ontario bred race. You've got the Fury at Woodbine tomorrow as well. So trying to keep an eye out for everything going on. And we, for those of you that were keeping an eye out for James Scully, here he is now. Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Glad to hear everything's looking good for racing today. And, excited to get this Beaumont Stakes weekend card underway.
Now, it's going to be a delightful afternoon. Give us... You want to start with a couple of Friday opinions? I want to concentrate more on Saturday, but there are people that are listening live as opposed to tomorrow.
Yeah. I'll go through some stakes opinions real quick today.
Right.
Really, my best bet on the card is in the first, the second stake, the first race of the All Stakes Late Pick Four, the Grade One New York. I really like Didia in there, Steve. She won back to back mile and a quarter Group One races in her native Argentina in 2021. I love the way Nacho Correas handled her last year, just running her twice at Colonial and an allowance and an illicit stake. He wasn't going to throw her to the wolves right away. He gave her the whole season to acclimate to North America, and he's brought her back this year. And I liked her Tom Benson Memorial. I thought her modesty was more impressive than it looks on paper. I thought Vincent Chaminade just shook the reins at her and up a stretch, and she really took off and won authoritatively. And I think she's going to keep moving forward. And I look at Warlike Goddess. She loves a mile and a half. Her only race that wasn't in a mile and a half last year, it was a mile and 3/8. She got beat at 2-5 that day. I think she's vulnerable in this spot, and I'm going to bet Didia in the New York Stakes.
You know, I'm glad, actually, to hear you side with her. because when I brought her up with Andy yesterday, Andy had kind of a feeling that she was, I don't want to say dressed up, but that, you know, she's been facing lesser, etc. And I, when a horse, you know, wins races like this and you know, puts together streaks, a lot of times when they, you know, get class rise, they just keep winning. It's like the horses, you know, sometimes you find yourself a recent maiden winner, and you know, you look at them on paper and you say, well, all right, he's just won once, he's running up against seasoned allowance types or whatever. When a horse is on the upswing, they just keep swinging up. I mean, and hitting above their weight, so and above their class. I mean, not they're trying to find their class level, but my point is that a horse that wins like this very frequently just keeps winning.
Yeah, I agree, and I love this strategy. I mean, I think it's been a real patient strategy, and I thought those races served a purpose. I think that Correas and these connections are planning to run her in all big races moving forward, and this is the starting spot. So I'll move on to the Acorn Stakes. Pretty mischievous. You know, I thought she lasted a mile and an eighth last time, but I think the mile and a 16th distance is a better fit for her. You look at the last five Kentucky Oaks winners that have run into Acorn. You have three wins, a second, and a third. So they've come back and run well in that spot. And she just has the tactical foot to reel in the speed. Now, I do respect the Chad Brown trained fillies randomized and the seed. But and I'm going to fade Money's Gold from any multi-race wagers, but I'm going with Pretty Mischievous in there.
Yep, I'm on board.
And then in the Belmont Gold Cup, I think Amazing Grace is set to rebound with a real strong performance. I don't know if it'll be good enough to beat Siskiny, but I know I'm going to get a much better price on her. I just thought that Sheepshead Bay was like, you know, just a dreadfully slow pace, and she was never comfortable. And, you know, this is the mare that last year really turned to some top class efforts. Her last effort at Germany in late September against Rebel's Romance was outstanding. And, you know, she came back and won that Orchid, probably needed that race, didn't get a chance to run her best race last time. And I just think, you know, this could be the spot for her to put it together, because she has a chance, I believe, to stay the 2 mile distance effectively. And there's actually a little bit of like speed, you're not going to have like a hot pace, but you're going to have a more realistic setup, it looks like to me, in this full field. And I like Amazing Graces. I'm going to give her a little bit. I'm going to give her the edge over Siskiny and use both runners in multi-race wagers.
6-1, and we discussed a little bit about Amazing Grace with Ron Anderson the other day, because Joelle is riding.
Yeah. And I'll just mention Amy C. real quick in the finale in the Intercontinental. I mean, I don't really have a strong opinion on her, but she runs well off the layoff and is one of Belmont and has found her niche sprinting. I'll turn to Saturday's card if you want to.
Absolutely, of course.
All right. I just want to mention one race before getting in the stakes. Race 4 is allowance race. I think that race has a really soft favorite in Life Changer. And I'm going to go with number 9, 12th Man, the 9 in race 4 tomorrow. There's no guarantees he breaks off of those last two races, but he's exited 2 troubled races where he didn't get out of the gate well. If he gets out of the gate well, I look for a much improved effort from the 9. He's 6-1 in race 4. And then turning my attention to the stakes races, I'll just go to the Ogden Phipps. I mean, I understand. I mean, Clary Air definitely deserves all the respect. She ran such a big race in this race last year, but that race had all this pace in it. She was like 12 lengths back and came rolling. And I just think there's not going to be as much speed. I think search results had, that was a really good return effort. So if anybody beats Clary Air, I like search results. I'm going to give her the slight edge in the Ogden Phipps.
Wow, it's you, me, Shap, and Andy all committed to search results. All right, good.
Yeah. And then in the Woody Stevens, you know, I respect General Jim. And I know Arabian Lion's going to be on the front end. Wouldn't be surprised to see him run well. But I thought Fort Bragg ran huge in that day mile.
James,
yeah,
he's coming out. He's got a fever.
Yes. Okay. Well, never mind then. Sorry. Never mind.
Well, who are you either going to scratch into or how does what did you like about him stylistically in this spot?
I like the fact they were adding the blinkers on there, and I thought his lone wing came with the blinkers, and he came off of an effort which was it was an encouraging run. I just love the way he bounced. He ran so much better cutting back to a one-turn distance last time, and I think these one-turn distances were going to be in his future, and I was looking for a big effort from him. But, that was a race where, I was going to use him, but I was going to definitely save with Arabian Line and General Jim. I was like looking a little bit narrow in that field, and so sort of bummed because I was going to bet some tickets with just Fort Bragg. I'll turn to the Jiper. That's a race where I know a lot of people are going to be spreading. I like number two, Go Bears Go. And this is a horse to me, Steve. He won three Group 2 or Group 3 races. He placed in a Group 1. He won four of his first 12 starts in Europe, and it was a really talented sprinter over there. And he's a 6 furlong specialist. They would, he probably could go 7 furlongs as well, but all of his best races have come at 6. He didn't run a step in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, but that was an encouraging third. That no ball, whatever. The horse won that race wire to wire that day on the Derby Day undercard. And I like that effort. I love the jump switch to Jose Ortiz. I mean, John Blasquez got 2 wins from like 20-some starts at Beaumont. Jose Ortiz has 31 wins over the first 5 weeks. He's the leading rider. I thought it was a great jock switch for a horse that's moving forward off of his last effort. It gets back to his preferred distance. I'm going with Go Bears Go in the Jiper.
Go Bears Go is like it's like one of your pets, right? You keep going back.
You read my Turf Sprint preview because I did that for ATR last year. I didn't take him to win in there, but I had him with the place. So in the Met Mile, the Met Mile, I'm just going to say with Cody's Wish, I don't like the rail draw, and I'm worried about how he's breaking from the starting gate. I mean, he just sort of is not getting away from the gate all of a sudden. You look back last year when he won that Westchester at Belmont 15 months ago, he wasn't breaking like he is now. I don't like the rail draw. I'm worried about him getting out. This race doesn't have a ton of speed. I'm going to charge it on all my multi-race tickets. I think he's a horse for the course at Belmont Park. He's poised to run a big race. But my top pick in this race is number 2, Slow Down Andy. I think he's going to be keyed up off of the break. He's drilling 6 furlong bullet works. And if he breaks, he's going right to the front, I think, with Mario Gutierrez. And let me just say, he stumbled badly out of the gate of the Awesome again. Didn't have the cleanest trips. He got beat 2 lengths by the Funded that day. He came back in that Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, and I do not know why Mario Gutierrez gave up his spot on the inside on the first turn to postpone, but that put him in a tricky spot all the way through the turn, and when he swung out to make a move, he got shut badly in upper stretch. He could have easily been fourth in that race, beaten a lot of lengths, and he came again late. He's coming off 2 troubled efforts where he placed in grade 1 races. I think he moves forward at age 4. I like Slow Down Andy in the Met Mile.
That's the second Slow Down Andy reference of the morning because Hammer is using him. Dr. Scheivel is kind of my Slow Down Andy, but I can see it. I understand all the positives.
Yeah. I mean, Dr. Scheivel has a pair of wire-to-wire wins. One's in that 3-horse field, and the other one in that San Anita Sprint where I just think he took advantage of the circumstances. I hope he's sitting second or third. I don't really have a strong opinion in Manhattan. You know, I mean, it's a good race between the favorites in my mind. Ottoman leading up to the mark, but I will say that I will give you my thoughts on the Belmont Stakes. I like number three, Arcangelo. I think this colt is moving forward. I really thought that Peter Pan was a terrific race by this colt. I thought Bishop's Bay was razor sharp that day. You know, he took a run at him. That other horse fought back, and then he came back again to win going away under the wire by a head. And I just think that's a big effort to move forward off of following a maiden win. And I just think that he's really going to run a big race in the Belmont. The other horse that I'm going to use on all my multi-race tickets is Hit Show. And I love Hit Show's Derby effort. I thought arguably it was after two fills, it's one of the best races any horse ran. I do think there was something to that element where in 2013, Oxbow and Palace Malice won the last two legs of the Triple Crown after getting nothing in the Derby, chasing the hot pace. Both horses were a price in both races, and I think Hit Show is going to show speed. He could be setting the pace with Manny Franco, and if he's not, he's going to be sitting second, and I think he's going to run a big race in the Belmont Stakes. So I got Arcangelo, Hit Show. I'm fading all the favorites.
All right. I'm using both. Hit Show, haven't decided yet if I'm putting Hit Show on top or Angel of Empire, but one or the other. I completely agree. I think the whole race goes through Cox.
And then I got a last second Friday push, Mr. Kringle, number 12 in race 7 at Belmont today. Showed improved speed last time, Steve. That's a real positive effort to build upon. And he's 12-1 on the morning line. So that's my last second Friday push.
I like Mr. Kringle, and I'm also using the horse that beat us. Creesa is also 12-1. And Con Man for DJ, the 2, and Feathers Road, 15-1 for Linda Rice. And I have not mentioned the outcome yesterday that was announced. The judge, whatever they call that kind of a judge, basically setting aside the three-year suspension, calling it completely unwarranted. And right now, Linda Rice accepting the $50,000 penalty, and they're going to, the Gaming Commission, I guess, will reevaluate a more reasonable and logical suspension, maybe, who knows, whatever, 90 days, whatever. The 3 years was preposterous, considering there wasn't actually a rule that could be cited that she supposedly broke. But this whole thing has been kind of an arduous...
It's a bit embarrassing to be dragging on like that.
That's well put. James, I appreciate it. Good luck. And,
best of luck to you, Steve. Thanks so much.
James_Scully, 111, everybody. And Nicole Russo is on her way. Right now, Forte is schooling in the paddock. Tom Durkin is going to join us for a quick hit at about 11:15, and then we'll round out the week's coverage with Nick Tamaro. Actually, it's going to be by phone because Nick's running a little late getting here, so we'll do it by phone instead of by person. And lean forward for a second. Here's a surprise visit. You loved him on the Derby show. Some of the best received comments.
My mother loved me on the Derby show.
There you go. The one and only Billy Rappaport. And I wasn't sure. I forgot to check in with you. The last time I saw you was after Derby. And you said, you didn't know if Fox was going to reach out or not about coming and being involved in the Belmont coverage. I guess they reached out.
They did, thankfully, and I'm very happy about it and appreciative of the opportunity to continue with a race I love in a very important Triple Crown event, and I'm excited to be here working with new people, which at my advanced age and at this point in my career is not what you would think not normal, because you're kind of used to being with a certain group. But they did reach out for a while there. It was kind of like that Jimmy Buffett song, "If the phone doesn't ring, it's me." And for a little while, I was like, "Oh boy, that must be them not calling." But then they did, thankfully, and we came to a nice agreement. And I'm really excited about helping them to build their show, and to also look towards the future, because they clearly have a big commitment with the Belmont, and every good horse needs a trip over the track, and I'm happy to at least assist in that regard here, and I think they got some great things planned.
Well, in addition, of course, to them having, I mean, from a network standpoint, having had now this extended run with the America's Day at the Races and the Saratoga Live show, there's that element, but you know, having someone like you, and I haven't talked to him yet about it, but Jay Privman has been engaged as a consultant, and you know, I'm sure Jay working on content and
yes,
things
Jay,
for the talent.
Jay, exactly right. Jay's been meeting with all the talent, doing a bang up job on all the research, an editorial consultant on the show, and you know, look, Jay, not many people win a lifetime Eclipse Achievement Award for their work in this sport, and clearly Jay was not only well deserving and of the honor, but is a legendary person in the game from that side, and to have him as part of the team was great. I remember seeing his name on the first email that came by, and I sent him a note right away. I said, "Belmont, baby," and it was great. It was great to have him, and I got a chance to give him a hug yesterday. Of course, he's appropriately attired in his King Umberto, polo shirt.
I got him his first King Umberto shirt.
Well, this, I'm not sure if this is the
this
same
is a
one.
New, no, this is a new one.
Okay, all right, good.
Black, and I got him a white one with blue.
Right,
he's got
he has the black one on yesterday, exactly. But it was great. It was just great to see him and give him a hug. It had been a while since we had been together.
The black is that's the Billy Rappaport line.
Yes, I've been people. You know, it's funny, Steve, you say that, because like when people see me out here like today or during the week, and they see me in something other than black, they kind of freak out.
Yeah.
They're like, "Oh my God, I've never seen you in anything." I'm like somehow I walk around in black all the time. It only happens when I do shows, but clearly a lot of people see me that way. It's funny. So I'm in kind of a purple shirt today, and somebody said to me, "Wow, that's a color I've never seen on you." I said, "Yeah, it's usually not what I wear too often."
Well, it makes you easily identifiable for, you know, for the people who are seeking you out during the production. Speaking of the Fox experience, not only, I mean, is there a crew assembled or bits and pieces of crews being put together for the first time, we do have some front of the camera talent that is new to the game, and I mean, talk a little bit about, you know, just that part of it. I mean, Kurt Menefee, you know, kind of taking on, I guess, the role that Greg Fox has done, and Tirico, et cetera, that, you know, have come in from other sports, and has to, you know, take up the mantle.
Well, first off, Kurt is a total pro, and as you may recall, he was here in New York at WNYW, Channel 5, a Fox affiliate where the race will air, for many, many years before he went to California. So he knows the Belmont, he understands its importance, its significance as obviously the third jewel in the Triple Crown, but he's very engaged and very interested in everything that's going on. We were in some meetings yesterday, and the questions he was asking, and Krista Thompson, the same thing. She's a horse person, actually. I came to find out that she actually has a ranch, and she can ride, and does ride, and so she's excited about it as well. And as you indicated, you know, bringing Tom Durkin back, I mean, goodness gracious, you know, it brings kind of a tear to my eye. I get emotional thinking about Tom coming back and calling this race and some of the great races that he called here over the years, as well as other places. So that's great. And Tom Rinaldi is a tremendous pro, has done horse racing before, and just to have his essays and his sensibility is great. And Mike Smith, obviously having Mike Smith here as talent is
first real occasion for Mike Smith to do something
like
this.
You know, as I recall, he did something on NBC maybe back in the 80s, maybe
wow.
In the late 80s, I want to say, or maybe in the early 90s. I'd have to ask him that question. But I kind of half remember that. He may have even done a little work for ABC at one point. I remember kind of him with Al Michaels, maybe when he was hurt or he didn't have a mount. So he's done a little bit of it, but this will be a different experience for him, mostly because he's going to be on a set. he doesn't, that's not his normal, you know, space. And I think it's exciting for him because he's going to be right next to Kurt and Tom Amos. You know, what can you say about Tom Amos? He's obviously a great trainer. He has a whole different prism that he looks through than anybody else up there, clearly, and I think he'll add obviously a lot. And Maggie Wolfendale is terrific, as you know, and she'll be out on the horse, and having her perspective and point of view will add to the you know, to the overall package in terms of how it's all put together. And Pete Macheska, who's an award winning producer for Fox with baseball and all the other great things, as well as Bill Richards and Matt Gagel, their director, is, you know, these guys are their top shelf guys, and all are either doing the Sunday football show and the studio show with Bill, or Pete's out doing, you know, the games and baseball. As I said, just won an Emmy Award for their coverage of baseball last year. So it's great to have that level of talent for obviously such an important day, and their first step out of the gate and with this event.
What will viewers notice or feel or sense that's different about this coverage?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say that's different, and you can see it from where we're sitting, is look at where the host set is. I mean, that has never happened here in all of my years of being around this sport, to have the host main set position just off of the winner's circle here on the apron on the grandstand side. So that's very cool. The fans will get a chance to see that. Obviously, the talent will have a chance to literally turn around and see the racetrack. And you know what, Steve? It's very much like when you watch the other studio shows, if you will. They're on the field of play, right? They're right there. And so you get to have it at sometimes that interaction where the ball player comes by them and bats them on the head or does something funny. This is, to me, a very unique approach. I would have never thought it, quite frankly, and it's bringing that sort of, you know, you're right there moment sensibility to it, and it's going to look really cool in a great angle.
On that topic, when dealing with Belmont, and differentiated, Billy, from your years of experience between this venue, Pimlico, and Churchill, given the vastness of the oval and the breadth essentially of the building. And one thing that's going to be fascinating is 5 years from now, a completely new building. The oval won't be that different. But talk about that portion of it. And it feels like by doing this, we want to make it more intimate and more connection.
Well, since it wasn't my idea, and I've been brought into this long before that was, you know, much later after that was decided, I can't speak to what their thinking was, but knowing what they do when they do other studio shows, and they, especially for their football, and they take it out of the studio and they bring it to the venue, that is, I think, it's all about not only the intimacy, but about being part of the experience, you know, and not on a set somewhere else, so that the fans can see it, they can be in the environment, they can be part of the vibe, and feel the energy of the crowd, especially when those horses come down the stretch. I mean, they're right there. And that's not always been the case. This is the first time this has ever been, to my knowledge, having a main host set right there off of the track for the Belmont Stakes. I mean, I'm not saying it hasn't been done in other places. I mean, we did a Breeders' Cup for a few years and did things, but a lot of times with the physical racetrack, like, for example, the host position for the Derby this year for NBC was on the first turn. So that you have the spires in the background, right? So that's different. Obviously, for a lot of years in the early days of the Breeders' Cups that were here, although there weren't many, they would be the host position where Tom Hammond would sit up on the second floor, the third floor, looking out over the racetrack from higher
Naira,
up.
Naira's
right.
got that, one
right.
of those
and
sets.
And they've got one of those sets, obviously, for their everyday, you know, not at the races. And that, I just think it's a cool thing. I mean, when you can put the talent, the studio talent, right there among the people, they're going to feel it in a way that that they can't even imagine what they're going to feel. And being in it, I think, only adds to not only the experience, but it adds for their ability to really understand the energy of what's happening around them. And it's a little bit, when you're on the first turn or you're far away, those things all matter, but you're not as in it. And I love that concept of being right in it. And boy, they are right in it.
From a production standpoint and a scripting standpoint, talk about some of the Triple Crown attempts over the years. And, of course, we are with all of this 50th anniversary of Secretariat, and we're going to listen to Chick Anderson's legendary call to close the show. It was 50 years ago today, June 9th, 1973. How many failed Triple Crown attempts were you on the ground for?
Everyone from 2001 to today. So, you know, whether it's the Smarty Jones year, obviously, you know, I got to go back in my very small brain to remember. We did, you know, Point Given, right?
What, yep.
That
yep.
was another one. I'm sorry.
War Emblem.
War Emblem, right,
next
exactly,
year.
Exactly right.
Well, Point Given had lost the Derby.
Right.
So
it wasn't a Triple Crown.
But it was a hell of a performance.
Yeah. So, and then the Brig Brown thing, right?
Brown,
that was kind of a fiasco, right?
And 100 degrees out here.
Yeah, it was not. That wasn't pretty. I guess you'd have to help me along here in terms of remembering some of the other ones that didn't happen.
California Chrome,
that was another.
Which included the Meshuggah Steve Coburn scene.
Yeah, that was a highly unusual thing.
That was highly entertaining. Yeah. Let's call it what it was.
I mean, I couldn't disagree with you for one second. I have to be honest with you. I remember walking in that morning, and they had their box, and they were there very early, and we're just setting up and getting things going and all this other stuff. And I look up, and there's Coburn with his hat, the whole nine yards, with his cowboy hat on. And he must have been four or five Bud Lights in already at that point. And he's just, I think this was 9 or 10 in the morning. And they came to party. I mean, they came to, and good for them. I mean, clearly. And it was, it was one of those really unbelievable stories. But being here for the ones that have happened, that's pretty cool, and you feel like, and you've been here when it happens too, and you feel like, wow, this is really happening. And and obviously, you know, the Justify thing, I have some friends, as you know, that are part of that ownership, so that for me was a little even extra special. And Mike obviously has been a close friend for a long time, but seeing Victor and seeing Mike cross the wire here and win the Triple Crown was an amazing thing to say that you were fortunate to be at.
We forgot Funnyside.
Oh, and Funnyside, yeah, of course. Funnyside was the other one that they all came down in the Sacatoga stables in the school bus. But, you know, it's still such an amazing race. It matters so much. It's equal to all the others in my mind. That's why there's three. And we're excited to just, you know, put the Belmont up on the pedestal that it deserves to be on.
Well, it's New York. Being in New York, it goes a long way. And we talk about the grand scale. On that topic, because Andy Beyer reached out to me this morning. Andy is going to visit next week because he's got some thoughts. And Andy
always has thoughts.
Andy may break the horse racing Twitter, HRT, as everybody refers to it, on Monday or Tuesday when he joins us. How do you think a spreading out, a little widening of the date calendar of the three races, how do you think it would affect the drama and the presentation of the product, essentially? Is it sustainable, let's say, over 7 or 8 or 9 weeks in the same way it produces its own energy and drama in 5 weeks?
Well, I think there's a couple of things there. Number one is you always want the best horses, right, at every race. Doesn't matter which race it is, you want the best horses. So what do we do for the horses to make them perform better? Maybe give them a little more rest, maybe give them more time to ensure that you can't guarantee anything, as you know, other than it's always better to put the curtain inside the tub when you're taking a shower. I will guarantee you that. but other than that, you know, you want the best foot forward, literally, and so if it means a little more time to get the best horses to all three races, I'm all for it. I do also think there's something to be said about building promotion. You know, sometimes people get, even though the 5 weeks, during the time period, I understand how that all works, the 8 weeks, I understand how that all works, but at the end of the day, the longer you have to talk about it and build it and lead to it can often mean a better result in terms of the rating, the excitement. And so there's something to be said for if you stretched it out a little bit, it's not going to devalue the races. The races are the races, right? So what you're really saying is does it give us a more chance, give us a better chance to have the best horses perform in all three races? And does it give us a better chance as a sport to keep having, to keep talking about it for an extended period of time? So you're constantly reinforcing the next race and the next race instead of like, oh, there it is. Oh, I forgot it was coming in 2 weeks, that Preakness.
It's interesting, actually. And you're the first. The people have talked about you know, the benefit of having a little more time, and that if anything, it would make a Triple Crown more difficult, not easier, for a horse to achieve. But putting it in those terms, that by potentially creating the best lineups and the fullest possible fields in all three events, that itself is makes it justifiable.
And promotion matters. You know, Steve, we the sport has an issue, clearly, a bunch of them. And one of them is the opportunity to promote good things and talk about, you know, building to the future, and whether it's a single race or the sport as a whole. So from my standpoint, and I'm not the expert in terms of the exact length between the races and what would be the best approach, but anything that you can do to stay in the news a little longer or stay on the radar a little longer is only going to make people follow it longer, and you're going to have a chance to identify with some of these horses and build a relationship for the fan with those horses, and all of a sudden now you've got a better chance of those horses showing up. So you're not going to disappoint the fans that they're not there. You have a better chance of them getting there, and you've had the benefit of talking about them for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and people following the bouncing ball going, how's that horse doing? How's this one feeling? How's this one? Is he going to come? Is he not going to come? And all of a sudden, you can constantly, especially through the face tweet and all the other stuff, I mean, you can now put that stuff out there in a way that you never really could before. And you can continue to talk about them, show footage of them, working out, training, interviews with the riders, and constantly reinforce what's going to happen weeks later. And I think that's, from my personal point of view, and I'm clearly, this is all above my pay grade, and as my friend John likes to say, if I was king, and I'm not, I think you've got to look at it big picture, and big picture is promotion of the sport, success of the great athletes, and the chance for them to perform at their highest possible performance level.
Well, certainly from a television production standpoint, the highest level, when Billy Rappaport is moving everybody around, putting the chess pieces in place, giving instructions, getting humorously exasperated with people in the wrong places. It's a scene. It's a happening, and we got the airflow cooperated.
It appears that we're going to be okay, and they say it's going to get better tomorrow. Today's gorgeous out here. I've got to tell you, look at this view we have. I mean, we're sitting here in the apron. It's absolutely beautiful. You got some little puffy clouds along the way. The flags are waving, and you couldn't ask to be in a better place.
No.
And I think tomorrow's, you know, we all pray for it to be a day like today. And I think from the air quality index, I'm sure today is meets the standards, and I'm hopeful, as everybody is, that tomorrow will as well.
Before we break, Nicole Russo's she's over in the paddock watching Forte School, so she's supposed to come by. Nick Tamaro in a little bit as well, and Tom Durkin, I think, after the break. But
I'll be tuning in for that one too.
There we go. Thank you. It does occur to me to ask one Belmont broadcast question. And I don't know if we've ever talked about it. I assume you were handling things in 2001?
Yes, sir.
Talk about that for a minute.
In what way?
The sharpshooters on the roof, the incredible tension, the unusual backdrop that pervaded.
You know, I was in New York that day on 9/11, and And, you know, it's for, as a New Yorker or any person, really, especially an American, it was very overwhelming, because you're now experiencing things that you never experienced in a place you never thought you'd experience them. I have to tell you, it was different, but obviously the Kentucky Derby in September of 2020,
yep,
was also another experience, yep, that was highly unusual.
Yep.
And I was, you know, you when I work on the Olympics and other things, you're used to a certain level of security, and obviously NYRA does a great job with their security here, and they've always done a good job, as all the racetracks do, and they pay great attention, especially on the big days. But when you're in a place where you're not feeling like it feels normal to you, when you work on the Olympics, you know, especially like if you're going to London, I remember in 2012, or in Beijing in 2008, the layers of security are crazy. You expect it. There's all kinds of terrorism thoughts. There's all kinds of things. You've got to go through all these different protocols and all this stuff. But you anticipate and you expect it there. And you almost, in a weird way, expect that if something's going to go weird, it's going to happen in those kind of environments, you know, less so in at the racetrack. So to be at a place where you'd been for so many years and experience it a certain way, and then all of a sudden experience it in this completely different way that you never imagined, clearly, and never and could not feel comfortable or relaxed.
Right.
Look, you're doing your thing, you got to do your work, but you kind of have this weird over your shoulder thought that you don't normally have, and that was a very sort of strange, for lack of a better way to describe it, feeling about just being here, and everybody on such high alert. And it's, you know, look, and this is unfortunately a lot of the stuff that we deal with in all these big events now, but thank God it was safe, and we were able to move forward.
Well, the construction that ultimately will happen here should pave the way for us to return to Belmont Park with a Breeders' Cup.
And I hope so. I really do. I hope so for Belmont Park. I hope so for NYRA. I hope so for the Breeders' Cup. I hope so for New Yorkers. I mean, it's been a long time since since we've had it here, and you know, you really know that this is a very important place in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and to not have a Breeders' Cup here is a disservice.
18 years?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 18
now?
Years. Yep. It's a disservice to the sport. It's a disservice to the fans, and it's the greatest oval. I mean, look at this racing oval. I mean, it's amazing. And while we've had Breeders' Cups here that have been, you know, had their clearly level of sadness and hard times, there's also been some amazing moments here. And I think that's what we have to focus on, and I look forward to it getting back here. And as you point out, once the dust literally settles here,
yeah,
and it's all good, I think it'll be a great opportunity. Look, it's a hard thing because this, as you know, this building's not winterized. That's always been the big issue,
yeah,
and you know, it faces north, which is highly unusual. Most racetracks in the world face south, so that's kind of a part of it that keeps it cooler. So that's also a part of the equation.
That was polite.
Yeah.
Okay. It keeps it cooler. Freezing here.
Yes.
It's
well, aqueduct never would have been built. Tom Durkin pointed this out to me the other day. We were just discussing it. He's like, you know, aqueduct never would have been built had this racetrack been facing south.
It wouldn't have been necessary.
Correct. Because of the sun.
Well, John Nayrud talked about what needed to be done.
Yeah.
And this goes back, you know, obviously Nayrud's dead now for a handful of years. But he
was the greatest, though, huh? I talked to him on his 100th birthday. I called him. He was the greatest. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it. He explained, you know, what the problem was and what needed to happen, and you know, moving the building to that side,
right,
would solve a myriad of problems. So,
well, all again, as we say, those are things that are at higher levels than you and I. No disrespect, but at the end of the day, it'll be great when this facility's done, freshened up. It's clearly an iconic building, but it'll give it a nice B12 shot, and I think people will be more excited to come out to something that feels a little bit more consistent with what's other sports venues are.
Well, the
about.
Modern amenities,
yeah,
and
all that.
The, you know, the conveniences, the comfort level, all the things that are, you know, that the modern sports fan and gambler wants to have.
Yeah,
period.
Exactly. It's a long way from me sitting with my grandfather in right field at Yankee Stadium at New York Football Giant games, having my chicken soup and my hot chocolate with my earmuffs on and everything else. You know, in terms of experience, when you go to these places now, it's all about the experience. It's all about, I mean, back then the experience was just, you know, sitting there drinking the hot chocolate and watching the game. But it's changed, and now it's just not about being in the seat and having a ticket and watching the game. It's about all the other accoutrement that comes with that, and you see it in every building. So to be able to add some of those, and I clearly don't know what they have completely planned here, you know, there's going to be some of that, I think will only play to having more fans want to come out, because it'll feel consistent with the other experiences they have at other sporting venues.
Well, those that are going to be tuning in, they're going to see something instantly familiar, but at the same time fresh and new, as Billy Rappaport brings his vast experience and just deft touch to Fox Sports and their coverage of the 155th running of the Belmont Stakes. We're live at Belmont. Billy.
Steven.
You did it again.
Well, thanks for having me. I was just very just serendipitous. I'm literally down having a meeting. I walk up and wave it at me.
Billy, get over here.
Get over here. There's nothing that makes me happier than sitting and speaking with you, whether it's on air or whether it's just having dinner in Kentucky. We always have a good time together. You're a gentleman. You do great for the game, and everybody appreciates it.
I appreciate the time and the kind words. Billy Rappaport, everybody. Back after this, Tom Durkin's going to join us, Nicole Russo from DRF, and then we'll close it out with Nick Tamara, or Nick can close it out with Nicole. Something along those lines. Back to Belmont right after this.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And